Joe's here.
I'm here.
All right, because I thought you, I know you stepped. Wait, Alan, you stepped away from
no,
me,
back.
And then Alan stepped away. Now everybody's back, so we can start the show. Whack it on out of here. So
2-3-1.
There we go.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
Just swinging in the breeze.
We didn't bet on when Joel was going to come.
Big O! Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. For the strolling, go direct to DLNGS.org. And IRC channel is a LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 842 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Alan.
Hello, hello.
We have Pat.
Happy New Year's.
Hey.
Hey, we have Joel.
Yo, yo.
Rich.
From the Hughes Outpost Orlando Command.
And we have Joe.
Hello.
And good day, everybody. If you don't mind, I would like to start off by giving a little bit of an update in regards to the Docker image that I had talked about that I was building for Node 12 and the requirements. So we were going to, the idea was use Alpine Linux. And as I've said in the past, Alpine Linux, fantastic distribution, uses Muscle, libc instead of glibc. So there can be some incompatibility problems. And so we ran into a fairly big blocker for us in using Alpine Linux. And that was one of our tests for an application. Has anybody ever heard of Selenium?
Yes.
Okay, so if you're not familiar with Selenium, it's a nice testing, a browser testing tool, and it allows you to like run tests, Selenium tests against your browse, like your application, and it emulates like a browser or the commands in the browser, and it calls it that way. And kind of like, there's different ways to do it. Selenium's a big one, but a lot of it uses like Chromium or headless Chrome or Firefox in the headless mode.
With Selenium, you can actually specify what the browser should be, you know, what you're going to be driving with it.
Yes, you can do that. And so we have some requirements, and one of those is we do have a Sauce Labs is another way of doing that, and they have like user interface testing through Sauce Labs, and it's kind of a paid service. They have it all built out for you, and I think they might use something similar, if not Selenium. But we also use similar to that is UI component tests that were written and make use of Puppeteer in Node.js, which handles the kind of backend / administration requirement in regards to whatever browser that you want to use. So it, instead of you having to install like Chrome or Firefox or whatever browser that you want to test with, it'll automatically handle all that for you in the background. Now, part of the problem with that is that Puppeteer, the version of Puppeteer is tied directly into whatever version of those browsers that you want to use, be it Chromium, Chrome, Firefox, or whatever. But I think it's primarily Chromium and Chrome, Google Chrome. And the blocker for that, allowing it to use that to download, is that it's going to pull down a version of Chromium or Chrome that's compatible with that version of Puppeteer. So Puppeteer kind of, when Chromium updates or Chrome updates, they have to update Puppeteer. So it pulls that version down, but it's compiled with glibc. So you can't use that version of Chrome or Chromium that's pulled down automatically by Puppeteer. It's because in Alpine it won't use it. So there is some recognition of that by the Puppeteer group, and what they say is you have to kind of disable the automatic downloading of Chromium and use the version of Puppeteer that coincides with the version of Chromium browser that is installed with your version of Alpine. And so there's currently 3.9 and 3.10 releases of Alpine. And then Sogelix is 3.9.1, 3.9.2, blah, well, 3.9, whatever. No, I'm sorry, not 3.9.1, 3.9.2. But so 3.8, 3.9, 3.10. And the Puppeteer updates documentation kind of lag a little behind what version of Chrome is in, Chromium browser is in Alpine. And now, generally speaking, the way it seems that Alpine does its updating is if there is a minor release of a package, it will increment that in the Alpine repository for that version of Alpine, but you can't go back to a previous version in that version then. So if like your library is 1.1 and 1.2 comes out, if you install Alpine 3, that version of Alpine, and it's going to give you version 1.2, you can't get 1.1, or else I have not found a way to do it. Now, if you already had Alpine installed and you wanted to pin the version, you could pin it to stay at that version, and then subsequent updates, minor updates, won't happen. But that doesn't work for us, because we're constantly rebuilding the image whenever it updates, like when there's an update, kind of like that's the way our process works. We want to get those updates. Well, when you do that, even a minor version release of Chromium browser can automatically become incompatible with Puppeteer and break your whole testing suite. And that's the problem that we ran into with using Alpine as the container image. It was wonderful, but that little incompatibility right there made it almost impossible to guarantee that we could retain operating system updates going forward and not lose the compatibility with Puppeteer. So we scrapped it in favor of Debian Buster, which is the latest Buster release. It was an absolute joy, and I'm serious. I mean, I really enjoyed the opportunity of working with both Alpine and Debian. I started with Debian, just Debian Buster, no JS image. And then ideally, we wanted to kind of go with the Slim one, but we were kind of concerned of how much do we have to add to Slim to get it to where we need. And is that going to be more complicated, more complex than just using Debian Buster itself? And it turns out we didn't really have to add anything else other than what we would have had to add with Debian Buster to begin with. Case in point, unlike Alpine and CentOS, the Couchbase stuff that we required was not in the repositories for Debian. So I had to add the Couchbase Debian repositories to get that in. That was really simple to do. And the same thing happened with Vault. I had to add a repository for Vault to pull down the version of Vault that we wanted to use. There wasn't a Debian package for Buster that we could use for that. And then Google Cloud SDK for our CI image, it was a similar process. There wasn't anything in the repos, so I had to add the Google Cloud SDK repo that had a package in there for Debian Buster. And so it was an enjoyable experience doing that, figuring that stuff out, and actually getting to work with the stuff that I primarily wanted to work with from the get-go, Linux distributions, and a little bit of building and working with those to get a container image that we're going to use. Now, I got that finished on Monday. I was really happy, ran all my tests on Tuesday. They passed. The application is functional in that. And then next step is going to be, so we were on node 8. Node 8 was recently end of life. There's no more support for it. We are moving to Node 12. So now the next step is that we have a working Node 8.17 image, is to upgrade that to Node 12, which is a simple changing of the image that we're using. Everything else remains the same. It's the beauty of this. And then build that image, and they're ready to begin moving the applications to Node 12. The one thing that we do need to consider, and I need to make aware with them, the developers, and talk with them in particular, is that there's a couple of different ways that you could manage this stuff. In that, if you look at the images that are available on Docker Hub, they follow a versioning pattern where you have the operating system and its version, and then the version of whatever like class of application that you're looking for. In this case, it's Node.js. So there's like version 13, 12, 11, and 10, and I think 9. There's all those versions that are available, and then for that, there's an image, a Buster image, a Buster Slim image, an Alpine, and then there's also kind of named versions for the release of Node.js. Now, they name their versions after precious stones, so there's like emerald and ruby and stuff like that. And so they coincide with specific releases. Now, when you're looking at the way that it operates, is at the very top, you have something like Debian, Buster, Node 12. So that means that any update that comes in the Buster, you're going to get. And any update that comes in for Node 12, any release of Node 12, you're going to get, right? And what I mean by that is the way that we build our images, right? We do this in a Jenkins, we do this in a Jenkins build job that every week it's scheduled to run, and it goes out and it pulls down that image and it pulls down our image. And it reads the hash that's stored in that image, the digest of that image. And we save that digest of the master image, the container image. Like it used to be CentOS, and now, like I said, it's Debian Buster. We store the hash of that digest in a label in our image, and we compare it. So if the master image has changed, then we're going to rebuild our images based off of that new master so we get the updates. Right. But we have to be careful with that, because like I said, at the top, it's like Debian Buster Node 12. Then next is Debian Buster Slim Node 12, whatever the release is. And I think right now it's 12.14, I want to say. So any release then of like 12.14.1.2.3, you will get, but you won't get 12.15. And then there's another option to do like Debian Buster Slim Node.js 12.14.1. So you're pinned specifically to that version of Node. You will not get any other updates other than that version of Node right there. You will get Debian updates, but not the Node version. Alpine was kind of similar to that. Like if you had like 3.9 and there was a minor release of 3.9, you would get that, but you wouldn't get 3.10. Now you could just specify Alpine 3 and whatever minor release of Alpine would come out, 3.10 you would get, 3.11 you would get whenever you rebuilt that image. So that was a caveat right there, and I need to make sure that they're aware of that, because the way that we've been doing is they've kind of pinned it to a version of Node for local development purposes, but they need to be aware of that. If it's possible that if they want to start with 12.14.1, which is the latest release, depending on which image they're going to use, it could go to 12.14.2, it could go to 12.15, however they want to do that. This is what they need to be aware of. But anyway, that was some caveats there. Thought I would share that. It was an exciting experience. I still have a soft spot for Alpine Linux. But remember, if you're going to use it, be aware that of the possible potential incompatibilities. It's shrinking every day, less and less of a problem, but it's still there now between Muscle and glibc. There we go.
That's our tale from the kitchen, I guess, as Nordy used to call it.
You know what? That's the thing, Joel. You know, Tales from the Kitchen. Like, we just got, I don't use Chef anymore. I haven't used Chef in months. I like Chef. But, you know, since we've been moved to Docker containers and we build stuff in like, Docker, and we don't use, what is it, Joe? Is it Docker build?
Hub?
No, we use Docker Hub. That's where I'm getting the Node.js image. No, there's a, oh man. So there's Docker and there's, I think the Docker build is a framework that they have in place for building Docker containers, but we don't actually use, it's not Docker build, it's something else. We use Docker build, but not that exact framework. It's just using a Docker file that we use, but there's another way to do it. And I can't remember what it's called. Docker something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, good stuff. Good stuff. But yep. Yeah.
Use an Ansible playbook for the first time.
Oh yeah, there we go. It's right from Chef to Ansible. I hear you. Go ahead.
Yep. Really, all we, and this is actually it's kind of complicated. Because basically what we were doing is we were installing what we call the Elution Messaging Service and the Elution Messaging Adapter. One of them is essentially RabbitMQ. The other is, I think EMA is something completely custom. It's a Java process runs through Tomcat. So we have to install Tomcat. The way we installed it in the cloud was via Ansible playbook. I didn't write the playbook or anything. I just used it. Okay. But the way we had to set it up, now our Banner customers, which is the other ERP our company uses, they each one of them get their own Ansible server where the playbooks are stored and all that. What we have to do is we have to download a VM based on, I believe it's based on CentOS, I believe it is, and then we set up the keys. Basically generate a key on the client server and then put that in the SSH, the known keys repo on in the, you know, for the root user, and then run the playbook from the Ansible VM. So worked pretty well, although they had a failure in their script in that it didn't bring up Tomcat like it should have. And what I discovered was it was relying on Java needing to be in a certain directory. And it wasn't there. So, but Java was on the server, so I basically just copied it to where they expected it to be. Or I think in that case, I just did copy, and it was a copy and a symlink that I did, mostly because I think their idea was the playbook should have just dropped Java like straight out of the tarball into that directory, but it didn't do that. It put it elsewhere. So, and the only kind of downside was that this is for a production box I was setting up. The test box is already set up months ago, and when we ran the Ansible playbook, the production server was more up to date than the test server, and I had some slight issues. Mostly where I had a fat finger in configuration error in. The what we call the MS config. So, and then essentially what this server is supposed to do is between some other proprietary parts of our stack, what will happen is whenever something in the ERP is updated, like you update a name in the database or something like that, it's supposed to trigger a transaction through what we call a vision data exchange, and that goes out to Rabbit, and then EMA picks it up and sends a response back to the colleague system, which then in turn puts it up on our integration hub, which is and that's essentially what we're doing is we're making it so instead of having to do multiple integrations, you do one integration with what we call Ethos. And then in order for you to connect other applications to it, all it has to do is understand Ethos. It doesn't have to understand colleague or banner, it just has to understand Ethos. So once it can talk to Ethos, then it can talk. You can pass information back and forth between all the systems. So I'm sure I'm greatly simplifying it, but of course some of the first products that use it are of course our products. So we have an ILP integration, which will integrate Colleague with the integrated learning platform, like Canvas, or there's a couple other, I think Blackboard's included too. That was pretty much it. Wasn't done on the best circumstances, because basically the guy who did tests was out on vacation on a cruise. Of course.
Wait, he did it while he was out on vacation in a cruise?
No, I did it because he was on the cruise.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, damn.
And I had never done it before. So, eventually, I think we're going to be working on trying to get our AWS certifications as a team, our whole team, and then do a lot more integrate. Like, basically, use AWS more for what it's designed for. Things like some of the things I'd like to use is AWS backup to do our backups of certain directories and stuff. Right now, we're using OS level scripts to do that. Not the greatest WIT method, especially since we have a lot of customizations amongst our client clients that we're hosting. So, but I'm just excited I get to work with some of this stuff event finally. And then we were on a call today where basically the client system has a whole bunch of data issues, and somebody else should have been doing it, but we were starting to do it. And then we find out at the end of the day, they're doing that work. I'm like, no wonder we were butting heads back and forth. You know, I mean, you can, things would change under our feet, and they thought they were fixing things, and actually it was us fixing things. And so it wasn't a good day, but the Ansible experience was pretty positive. I've seen it execute quite a few times. Like, we had another example was when I was still on the transition team. They were working on doing things to help the transition team do some of their installation work so that everything would get installed in like standard locations and stuff like that. So unfortunately, some of the things that were installing were actually desktop applications that they were installing, like 7-Zip and a few other things. So not the greatest use of Ansible, but it works. And those were on Windows hosts.
So have you written any of the playbooks yourself yet?
Not yet. I've looked at some of it. It's not difficult.
Big fan of YAML?
Not really. Well, not really. I actually XML makes me cross-eyed, but...
Oh, come on. YAML's the bomb.
I guess it's better than pointing and clicking. I'll give you that much. That's for sure. But we'll see what fun we have later this week.
I don't normally mind YAML, but when you have to do some like special funky stuff that's not well documented, it becomes a pain in the ass.
Well, it's funny you're saying that. I was just thinking that about a language. You know, there just seems to be anytime there's a new type of language, whether it's, you know, a markup or this or something, they need to do better than the Hello World. They need to show you, you know, file.io and how to do more complex things. And that's the thing that ticks me off.
No, I agree with you. That's like even some of the middle, the less complex stuff, like here's how you use our language, Hello World, have at it. Here's the GitHub repository. You want to know what it does? Dig through all the source files and figure it out.
Yeah.
Why isn't this format working properly? I don't know. Dig through the source files and find out. I hear you, Rich.
Yeah, well, Home Automation Assistant is YAML. And I'm like, is it a space dash? Is it just an indent? What do I do here? I don't know. I'm like, well, it crap doesn't work. Oh, well.
This is yet another markup language. Yeah, YAML is a human-friendly data serialization standard for all
they say.
Human-friendly, right.
Well, I guess, yeah, as opposed to JSON.
I guess. Yeah, I guess it could be worse, too, so...
yeah, it could be all QR codes.
Or the red...
QR codes.
I'm gonna write a programming language in QR codes.
I did pick up some... Probably a more fun subject. I did pick up some more light bulbs for the house.
Light bulbs. That's my favorite fun subject.
Yeah. Smart light bulbs. Specifically, Mercury Innovations.
Dude, that is just rude. Light bulbs. You know, when you say that, do you know how many dumb light bulbs out there are really crying and upset now?
Zero, because they're not
alive.
Because
you're a light bulb bigot. You are just the biggest light bulb bigot out there.
But yeah, I picked up two of them at Walmart for like $20, and they're actually Wi-Fi specifically. It uses 2.4 gig, and the app they use is called Genie, Geeni. I might have.
Is that like the Walmart house brand smart bulb?
I don't think it's a house brand. Although it's very, I have never seen it anywhere else but there, but I don't think it's a house brand per se. But the nice thing is that it actually it's not just white, although it does do white, but you can make them green, red, blue, purple, whatever. So it's very similar to the Hue light bulbs. Although once you go to the colors, the light bulb itself is not as bright as when it's on white. So...
yeah, well, white is all three LEDs on full.
Correct, yes. Yeah, so... those things set up really easy, the only thing I do not like is I wanted to put that light bulb in my little 3D printed lamp I made that I designed to work with the Lightify bulbs. And unfortunately, the Mercury Innovations ones are a little bit wider than the Lightify ones, so it doesn't fit. I'd have to reprint it. In fact, I did talk about this last week, I think. But I played with it a little bit more. And it has things like I can have it pulse the light certain colors. I can have it cycle like rainbow and whatever, you know. But it's very nice and useful. I got them programmed to work with some of the Google Home Assistant scheduling. That actually works really well. So.
Oh yeah, I'm not familiar with Home Assistant scheduling. What is all that?
As long as your apps are made to work, or as long as your bulbs are made to work within the Home Assistant framework, you can have it schedule actions. Like, for example, and you can also have like a code word. So if you say, "Hey G, set living room to night mode," then what would happen is whatever you programmed for night mode would happen. In my case, I turn off one of the lights and I turn on the one with the colored light in red. So that way it's a little bit easier on the eyes in the living room. And I have that set, that same similar kind of action set up for the office. So when it gets to be a certain time at night, it'll turn off the Lightify bulb and turn on it leaves the other one on, but turns it from white to red. So and you can program any kind of action like that across multiple groups within the house. So, which is pretty dang on nifty, I think. And it's much better and much more reliable than the scheduling I had built into the Lightify's app. Lightify had the ability to do scheduling as well, but it was limited to, of course, just the Lightify light bulbs. So if you had other light bulbs that were not Lightify in the house, Couldn't use it for that, but now doesn't matter what kind of light bulbs I have, I can use Google, as long as they work with Home Assistant, I can have multiple brands do stuff all at the same time, which is kind of nice. Now, granted, do I have root on the light bulbs? Of course I do not. Do I wish I had it? Maybe. Be nice if it could. At least the, as long as the app will work, you know, which I don't think they're going to get rid of that app anytime soon. So, and I think Wi-Fi is going to be the way to control these versus the other nice thing with the Mercury Innovations ones, they don't require a hub, so they, you know, so they just work. So there's no hub that you have to have.
What's the wattage on them?
I think there's either 60 or 75.
Okay. Equal. I'm looking for something a little bit brighter than that I can still control from in the 60 watts. That, like the Hue lights are all like 60s.
Yeah, that's the equivalent. They don't use but maybe a tenth of that power. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know that. I was looking for output now. Need more power.
Mm-hmm. Boy, they do a lot more than I thought they did. They have gaming. They have they're kind of turned into like a looks like almost like a I won't say junk electronic company, but kind of like that a little bit, you know, because they have headphones, accessories, like a, they have like this if you look on their webpage, Mercury Innovations, it would be MERKURY. But they have things like mounts for your car, smart home stuff, speakers.
Where'd you get these at?
Walmart, $20.
Oh, Wally World, okay.
It's $20 for two pairs. Or not two pairs, one pair. So two bulbs.
Okay, I'll have to go take a look.
I figured for $20, it's worth playing around with it. Even if I don't... Because eventually what I plan on doing is I probably plan on switching everything. I'm trying to find like a system that can do all of it, the outlets as well as bulbs. So like, for example, right now, if I look on my phone, I have a folder with home automation stuff. And there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different apps in there. So it kind of sucks because I got... SwitchMate, Switch Cover deals. Basically, it's a motorized thing. It goes over a switch for lights in the kitchen and lights in the one bathroom. Smart Plus, which is for the one. I have one device that uses Smart Plus, and that's the switch I wired in the hall. And ironically, it's also by Osram Sylvania in the Osram Sylvania Lightify. Jinvu Smart for the Wetton power strip I got for a Christmas gift, and the Genie app for the Mercury Innovations Lab bulbs and stuff. I think they have other things too through Mercury Innovations.
Huh. I'll take a look at that.
They may have like outlets and stuff. By outlets, I don't mean the outlets that you wired, but like devices that you'd plug into the outlet first, and then you plug in whatever you want to control with that. Like if you want to plug in your coffee pot, you know, you can do that.
Yeah, I have one down in the basement. I think it's a Wemo down in the basement for light over top of the washer, because that tends to always get turned off.
Yeah. That's the other, and the best thing about even the worst of these new smart home kind of products that's out there are 10 times better than X10 ever was. When we first moved in, I experimented with X10 because I found IBM had X10 products, and they had a kit at Lowe's that I saw that they marked down to like $20, and I tried it, and that was awful. I never could get it to work right.
When I had my apartment, I had a lot of X10 stuff. And it did work. I had no issues with it. I had like this interface that you can hook up to your computer so you can control shit from that.
Yeah.
It worked pretty well for me.
Back when you had to have a serial port to run it.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I came across it when I was cleaning the basement. I was like, okay, I guess I can get rid of this. I don't have anything that has a serial port.
Yeah, Mercury Innovations have just the plain white bulbs. They have spotlights.
I even have the X10 cameras.
That brings back memories of that that X10 camera. I think you'd...
The pop-ups that used to come up.
Yeah.
How I actually bought it.
Probably, yeah. They have smart Wi-Fi bulb, the white and the color ones, the floods. They have a Wi-Fi camera and an outdoor Wi-Fi plug and an indoor Wi-Fi plug. All fairly cheap, too, and the prices they list on their website are not what you would pay in Walmart. It's generally cheaper at Walmart.
Is the smart bulbs, do they have a plastic or a glass bulb?
That's a good question. I want to say, I know it has like a plastic base, like right above the standard A19.
Most of them are plastic.
Yeah. But I got one of the Lightify ones sitting in here, and let's see. It's plastic. The Lightify ones are plastic. Okay. I'm not sure the Mercury ones are. In fact, this Lightify one I have in my hand actually has a crack on one side of the bait part. It still worked the last time I used it. I think I actually had some problems with some of my Lightifies. I had at one point I had three of them in the bathroom, and my wife would be in the shower, and they would shut off. So the whole bathroom would be dark. So she got tired of that. She got regular light bulbs to put in there. So that's why I moved the ones. I had the one switch mate. I had both the switch mates in the on the light switches I had in the kitchen. So I moved one of those into the bathroom. And then I moved the light bulbs that were in the bathroom to the lights over the kitchen sink. And they seem to be okay there. Of course, they're not on as much as the ones in the bathroom because there's lots of light that comes into that room anyway, so you generally don't have to have them on. But I can tell you this, with the SwitchMate devices, don't even mess with them. They're not great. They don't work with either Alexa or Google Home Assistant. But they do. I mean, the nice thing is if I do leave, like if I walk out of the kitchen and I leave the overhead track lighting on, I can just open up the app on my home and shut them off. And yeah, is it lazy? Oh, yeah. And that's the whole point.
That's the whole point of it, isn't it?
Yep. Yep. The only thing I wish I could have done is when we replaced the fixture that's basically right outside my office door here, and that's why I put the switch on in the hall. When I had a regular fixture that took regular bulbs, like Lightify bulbs, I had set up a motion in the hall so that when you walk through the hall, the lights would come on. But then after somebody, after a period of time of no motion in the hall, they would shut off. And I actually still have I had two motions sensors, one upstairs and then one downstairs by the laundry room, and that one actually was okay. That one turns on the two light bulbs in the laundry room and one light bulb in the hallway. So I don't know if it actually saves us any money because LED bulbs are so stinking energy efficient, you know. But at least one thing, like a couple of things, like I know Lightify, and I'll have to see if I can do something similar with the Google Home Assistant. But when we went out town, I set like a away mode so that it would randomly switch the lights on and off to make it look like the house was lived in when we were away. And Yeah, I don't know if it did anything because I wasn't here, but at least I have that. And I remember back in the 80s, my grandpa had one of those little timers with a little dial on it.
Yeah.
And that's what he did.
Uses those.
Yep. He had those. That was like early days of home automation. But.
The X10 stuff, that's been around for a long time, hasn't it?
Oh, since the 80s at
least. Well, I thought it might even be around in the 70s. I thought I saw a commercial for it that dates back to the 70s. I could be wrong.
Yep. Well,
it's quite possible.
Yeah, well, Radio Shack had extensive. And X10 existed before computers did, before computers became more common. And I know the Radio Shack had a little battery powered pad that once you put them in there, that battery powered pad would send a wireless signal to the X10 base unit. Then that would turn the lights on and off via the X10 signals. So basically it was like adding a remote control to your lights. And there was no computer at that point. They just had these little pads that you could use. Which I never had those, but when I had it, I was just using my computer to experiment with it.
I set my setup for 9 o'clock. It would when the X Files came on, it would dim the lights, and I had one of those plasma balls that would turn on over top of the TV.
And X10 still exists too today. 1978. It says home gadgets since 1978.
Right, so the X10 protocol was, I guess, released in 75, and the product started coming out in the late 70s. In 1978 was when it really hit the U.S. market, Radio Shack, and then Sears rolled up and other companies. Yeah, I remember because we sometimes watch old commercials on YouTube, reels of old commercials, and I remember seeing a 70s reel with the X10 where they're talking about turn your lights on and off on a timer and remotely. It was like, wow, I can't believe it's that old.
Well, one thing that I can't believe it's not around for the most part anymore is, do you remember in Popular Science the DAC advertisements?
DAC?
How was that spelled?
Digital Audio Converter?
No. This was the actual company that basically sold this kind of stuff. Not just X10, but had other things too, like bread makers.
I don't remember that company.
See, it was DAC was the actual initials for the guy.
Wait, it wasn't the DAC Industries catalog, was it?
I think so.
Is it the stuff from DAC.com? That's, well, I'm like DAC.com now.
It might be. I'm looking. Oh my gosh, they still are around. Yep, that's them.
Yeah, so it's published by DAC Catalog, published by the DAC Industries, a discount electronics importer in the United States. It was named after the owner, Drew Allen Kaplan.
Ain't got a whole lot of stuff right now.
So this is founded in 1966 and became popular in the 80s as a mail-order catalog for electronics.
Yep. Yeah. My grandpa used to get the catalogs, and they always put ads. In Popular Science, that's the ones I always remember reading.
Oh my gosh, it's Brooklyn, New York.
For DAC? I still got a lot of stuff on their website, though, Joel. What do you mean they don't have a lot? Well, okay.
Well, it's funny. If you go and get out, it says, from explosive growth to losing it all and then back again, DAC's 50-plus-year history is an American-made tale for the books. Forget the Wikipedia article. Learn about what happened from the man, Drew Allen Kaplan. That's what DAC stands for. And right below that, it says, what happened to DAC? Coming soon. So I don't even know if you can actually buy stuff there anymore. Looks like you can, but...
Well, if you go to DAC.com, you can, but it doesn't look like they have, like, a whole lot. There's only one page of product.
Yeah.
That I see. Yep.
And a lot of it's just things like the DAC OctoGrip Wireless Charging Power Bank. Yeah. The perfect universal countertop smartphone stand, which I actually 3D printed. Hello. not the same one, but different one. DAX Power Bank Docking Station, DD Studio, Dual Driver. A lot of this stuff sounds like some of the stuff that Joe Bourne kind of does inadvertently now, although Joe has an Iowa brand now too. So, but I'm thinking of things like the digital innovation stuff, like they had an ACD cleaner and a few. It kind of feels like that kind of stuff, you know?
So they have a DAC smartphone memory saver, which is like a... How do you... It plugs... It's like a flash drive, but I think you have to put a flash card in it. It doesn't have it. And it has three different connectors on it. There's the USB micro, USB... What is it? USB micro? What is the bigger one called?
Mini.
Okay, yeah, mini. USB mini. And then the iPhone connector. It's like a triangle of that. And it's like $40. I'm like, damn, that's pretty expensive. Just to get an adapter to plug an external memory card into. Whatever.
They were one of the first ones to actually make bread makers.
Other than Micro Center, where's a good place to source Raspberry Pi Zeros?
Newark. I'm trying to remember the other one, the one that's in Ohio.
Okay, Newark is Element 14.
Yes.
Adafruit doesn't have them.
How many do you need?
Couple. Yeah, he might have some.
3-4.
3 or 4.
Oh, I got him electronics.
I got two, but one of them is currently being used as a pie hole. And... want to maybe set up a multi-room speaker system with it, but I'm not sure. So I gave my last Raspberry Pi 3B to my son for his Waveshare game hat. So I'm running out of supplies here.
Okay, MCM, they closed their Springboro facility here in Ohio. And I want to say, it almost looks like they were bought by Newark. Which wouldn't surprise me. Because you search for MCM Electronics and it goes Newark. The first link is actually newark.com/MCM partnership. So it has things that MCM would sell that Newark now sells. But with the, if you're seeing a lot of them aren't in stock, maybe that's a hint that they're coming out with a new Pi Zero.
Well, the 3A kind of is almost the same size. I mean, it's a bit bigger, but still. But the 3A is also base price of $25, where the Zero was a base price of, what, $5?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the non-Wi-Fi one, I think it was like $5.
And then the Zero W was $15 when it first came out, right?
Yeah.
No, was it 10?
Why do I think I paid a dollar for these things?
I paid $3.14 each for the two that I have on the Zero Ws.
Now, this is interesting. They have the iUniker USB dongle expansion breakout module for the Pi Zero / Zero W. Yeah,
the USB hub.
Well, basically, looks like a dock with a standard USB plug sticking out the side.
Let me see if Newark has the Zero. They ship slow. Well, they've got the compute module, which is interesting. Oh, sorry, Raspberry Pi Zero is no longer available. Although they still sell the Raspberry Pi 2 Model B 1 GB.
I've been trying to look for a case for the Pi 4 that basically is more than basically bigger than just the Pi 4, you know, like big enough to stick a hard drive into.
What's the new one that's coming out that has two Ethernet jacks on it that's supposed to give Pi a run for its money?
Sounds like Odroid.
No, it's called something Pi, but I'm like, how did they get away with calling it Pi?
Orange?
There's Cherry Pi, Orange Pi, Banana Pi. Yeah, there's all sorts of pies out there.
Yeah, I guess there's that.
I don't know.
I just saw it came across.
All you got to do is go to cnx-software.com, and it has all of that stuff.
What was that place? CNX?
cnx-software.com.
I'm looking for hardware, not software, man.
Yeah, remarkably, it has all sorts of ARM hardware.
Look at that. Oh, I mean,
Libre router. Open source hardware router for community networks.
Okay, and all I got to say is Asus is on crack. If they think this Asus...
To get them? Did Asus get them?
At the the Jetson Nano.
You got cut off there for a little bit.
Yeah, we lost after.
Yeah, so the Asus Tinkerboard Edge is $168.
They got me.
And for $90, you can get the Jetson Nano. So the Asus has always been on crack about their SBC.
Well, I would say the one kind of nice thing with the Edge is it has a full size HDMI on it, but that's not a big deal.
There's this thing called Amazon Basics.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get two cables in a pack for like $9.
Yeah. Well, the Jetson Nano is a AI thing, isn't it?
And that's what that Tinkerboard Edge was, too.
Okay.
It basically has the Google Coral NPU on it.
Heck, this will be everything on a mini PC show tomorrow, huh?
Joel, look at C4 Labs for cases. Your pies.
Joe or Joel?
Okay, Dan. So it's the NanoPi R2S dual gigabit Ethernet SBC router is powered by Rockchip 3328.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's, NanoPi.
That was it.
How much is that running?
It was very affordable.
$19.99. That's pretty damn cheap, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it has everything I want on it, but there's a nice Bel Air AC case. It really looks kind of cool on the C4 Labs thing.
Yeah, so if you want to do an ARM-based router, that would be it. Or really ARM-based firewall. Because you would still need a switch after the router because it only has two ports. But I don't know. At $20, it seems... I almost
want to wait till the second version of the Pi 4s where they hopefully fix the USB-C power issues.
I have not noticed any issues with mine yet.
I haven't had a problem either.
Wasn't it only a problem with cheap cables?
I forget what cable and condition it was.
I think it was a problem that if you didn't use the cheap cables, I think if you used the better cables, that was where there was a problem. If I remember,
audio device or something and not providing power.
Something like that. I can't remember.
That's right, Joe.
Now, on this kind of same bent, I forget where I read it, but there was somebody out there that makes a cable that plugs into the standard Surface port, and then on the other end is USB-C, so I can use the USB-C charger instead of the standard Surface charger.
Oh, yeah, lots of places are doing that.
Yeah, that's something I might pick up because it'd be nice so that I can plug it into like a power bank.
They're doing it for like MagSafe on the Macs also.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know there was a battery. Amazon, I did find a battery that actually came with a... I don't know what end was on the bank, but the other end of it, and it came with the cable. It was a different connector. It wasn't USB-C on the power bank side, but then it had a standard Surface connector on the other side. So, but that battery was like $100. And I don't know if I want to spend that much on a battery bank necessarily. Granted, I don't know. I haven't my wish list. I don't know how many amps that thing had. But I do need to start picking up some more power banks because I basically have only one of my power banks that I can seem to manage to keep for myself because I will not let anybody else take it. But all my other ones have been pilfered from me.
I've had some good luck with the older Samsung quick charge ones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the battery that for the Surface was the Poder Camino, and it's a 98-watt-hour battery, so it's actually pretty substantial size-wise. I think it's enough to charge the Surface back up from flat. At least once. So I've been thinking about picking that up, but then I'm not so sure anymore. Because the one thing I don't like about this Poder Camino battery is it doesn't have USB-C on it at all. So, and that's okay, because I have one. I have a RF Power that has it, but... I wouldn't mind getting that big beefy thing that Anchors has. Have you seen that?
No, where is it? Give a link.
I will get a link here in a minute. Yeah, it's sick how powerful it is. I think it also has an inverter built into it as well. And it's also very pricey.
Where'd you post it?
I'm still trying to find it.
Yeah, it's on the MeWe. Come on, you just gotta go to MeWe. It's right there.
Right.
The Life in Ohio post?
It's on the MySpace? No. Life in Ohio MySpace page?
Oh, that's funny. It was easy to find on their Amazon page, but I'm having trouble finding it right now. Maybe, hopefully, they didn't discontinue it.
All right. Well, I know it's a little bit early from you guys, but I've contributed so much this evening.
What?
I gotta take off.
Oh man, I was gonna bail before you. I was gonna wait till like 9:55 and then say, "Okay, guys, good night."
But you're gonna go over to Door, right?
A little late for that, though, isn't it, to go over to Door? Have a great night.
Door wants me there at 8:55.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Alan.
It's called the Anchor Powerhouse. It's 400 watt-hours.
Does it come with a diesel generator also, or a nuclear power plant?
It practically is one.
There's an optional Tokamar reactor for that?
You mean Tokamak, but yeah.
Dude, I got the Tokomar. Just, you know, don't try to one-up me on that stuff.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind having that at all. But I'm not spending $500 on a battery. If I'm spending $500, I'm just going to get a freaking generator.
We'll hook that up to your Raspberry Pi.
I've used power bolts on a Pi.
You could, but I don't know if you can use the USB ports. I bet you the USB ports don't provide enough juice for the Pi. You'd probably have to use the AC inverter on that. It's my guess.
You get enough watts out of that.
Out of what?
This would say
with power bolts on the Pi.
No, I'm talking about
I have two, yeah, but...
Oh, a generator.
Yeah, hook your Raspberry Pi up to that generator, Joel.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
Hey, Rich. Have
yes,
you
sir.
Checked out that Zero Pi?
No,
I dropped
Maybe I have and forgot.
See, there's one generator I've been seeing going around that basically is... It's actually... And I've never seen... something like this before until recently, but they basically are powered by propane, and they're designed so you can just screw in the portable propane cylinders in them.
There are dual fuel gasoline propane generators, and there's propane conversion for gasoline generators. And
now,
Joe, what's the Zero Pi? I dropped
the link in the Mumble.
Yeah, I got a problem with that, but I'll try and work through my problem with that.
Oh, you're on your phone?
I'll put it in the IRC. I don't know if you're in there. So that's not a Pi Zero, that's a Zero Pi.
Yes.
Okay, so that's Friendly Elec. I haven't bought any of their stuff.
Well, that's
but,
the same company that was selling that NanoPi.
Yeah, Door's had experience with them. I don't think he's had a bad time with that. What's your use case, Joe?
Oh, I was just looking at alternatives to the Pi Zero.
I don't know. The Pi Zero W, I mean, it does perform, because actually, like you said, I think I'm using a Pi Zero W as... Oh, wait, no. I'm using an Orange Pi Zero as my Pi hole.
And the Orange Pi Zero has... Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built in?
Depending on which model. I forget which one I have. I think that one had an Ethernet port.
Yeah, because the one I posted, the Zero Pi, had an Ethernet port and no Wi-Fi. And the Orange Pi Zero, is that compatible with all the Raspberry Pi operating systems?
Orange Pi Zero, I think, is Armbian and what else? I may have thrown Diet Pi on it, but there's a way of doing Diet Pi without a supported distro also.
Right.
You may know, Rich, does the Pi 4 support XHAT yet?
Well, you could always add the fuse libraries, so you could always, you know.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about making it so it can read XHAT. I'm talking about it so it can boot off of XHAT.
Oh, I don't know on that.
Because I discovered I have a cheap ass 512 gig card that I tried to boot in my old Pi 2, and it would not boot. The only thing I found that it could boot off of was FAT32.
Am I missing something here?
No.
Can't you just reformat it to FAT32?
Not easily with a Windows box. I probably could. Actually, I tried FAT32, and it wasn't. It still didn't boot. So. Oh, the Baja 900 watt propane powered inverter generator. That's the one. I keep seeing ads for it, and it's $250.
Yeah, but how many watts is that?
900. No, 900 starts. I'm sorry, 900 starting, 700 running.
All right, so 700 running. So you're not going to run a hair dryer, and you're not going to run a desktop computer. So what do you plan on doing with you said 700 watt generator?
Yeah, it says runtime at 25% load, which is 150 watts.
So you can run a light bulb.
No, 175 watts.
You run two light bulbs.
3 hours on one of the little 1 pound tanks, but you can also
1 pound tank.
Yeah.
Dude, you're out of your mind. Do you know how expensive those things are if you're going to be running a generator with it?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
But the adapter, so you never mind.
It comes with one that you can hook up 20-pound tank to. And it'll run 60 hours on a 20-pound tank.
So you can run two light bulbs for 3 days.
Yeah, for certain things, that's going to be enough. Listen, I'm not saying I'm buying it. I want at least a 5kW if I'm buying one.
So there's things I'm not buying, but I just don't talk about them on podcasts. Unless it's that 55-gallon jug of KY that's on Amazon. Then that's something I'm not buying that I can talk about.
Nobody believes that you're not buying it.
That's because I bought a truckload of them and I got a discount. And then I need the propane to warm it up.
Actually, I think probably my bigger point with this is generators are now starting to become cheaper to the point where it's actually something I might actually consider buying, either a portable generator or a whole house generator. Whole house, I think I looked.
And dude, I Elon Musk is just going to give you a Powerwall for free.
Yeah, Powerwall, yeah. Yeah. There's at one of the home improvement shows, I think it was like a Generac that would have ran my home. It would at least ran things like the kitchen or CPAP machines at night. I'd say probably 90% of the house was right around just between 4,500 and 5,000 installed And it would have the automatic cutover too. And you can just run a natural gas to it. So, which is what we would do.
And natural gas and propane are different. The air Correct. To fuel ratio is different. So you have to change, what is it? The jetting on it.
Yep. Yeah, but if I bought the whole house one, I would just have them use, I would buy the natural gas version.
You lose power often at the house?
That's the thing is it's in our list of things we'd like to do, but it's way down on the list. There's a whole lot of other things that we would like to do more.
Like eat?
Yeah. Or like replace the siding on my house and the trim, do the wood flooring in the basement. Air conditioning is probably higher on the list than a generator.
You got AC?
No, I got AC for the moment, but it's 20 years old.
No, okay. Hey, geez, I didn't think about it. AC in my house is 20 years old.
Yep. I'm praying it doesn't go out, but it's getting to the point where where if it goes out, it's worth replacing it now, especially since it's 20 years old, and anything newer is going to run more efficient and save me money.
That's because the electrons and technology have advanced so much as far as electrons go.
No, I don't know about that. Technology, but
yeah, I don't think so.
Well, and you also got to remember this is the cheaper builder's grade that they would use. So I can pick air conditioner than what I have.
You're going to get a Frigidaire or whatever unit, and it's going to be builder's grade. It's just going to be at the consumer price, though. So here's my thing on air conditioning is if it's running fine, what I would do also is just while your air conditioning unit is operational, meaning not while it's running, in other words, get the part number for the capacitor on it and order one from Amazon and keep it on your shelf. And the same thing for the, solenoid. Because those are two things you can replace. Just make sure you discharge the capacitor. And if you don't know how to discharge
it, you can replace it. I'm not going to because I am not. It's called talking about, or it's talking. Knowing your limits, and I know my limits, and there's no way I would try it.
Pulling off two wires and unscrewing two screws, that's beyond your limit.
I've seen the guy do it, and it's not that easy on mine. The last time he did it, he had to pull the whole blower motor out. So and it just depends on how well designed yours is. And that's the other thing, too. A lot of the newer ones...
Well, usually on air conditioning unit, the top, with the fan, the compressor motor is all in one unit, and that's attached to the top cover of the air conditioner. And so it just unscrews.
Yeah,
and then the capacitor, wherever it may be, if it's attached to the motor, most of them are not.
Yeah, I'm talking about the whole HVAC system. Because when we go to replace it, which we'll eventually do, I'm looking at whatever we buy, I want to make sure that I want to try and find them one that will let me do things like, for example, yank out the condenser and spray it down with a cleaner on my own so I don't have to pay somebody to do it, if you know what I mean. And a lot of them, because I was talking to a guy at the Home Improvement Show, a lot of the newer air conditioning units, they're doing stuff like that so that homeowners can do that work a lot easier than they could on ones that came out in the late 90s, like mine. So that, you know, and like I said, I ain't going to do it unless I need to. But
well, that's the whole thing. So in Florida, when it's hot out and your AC fails, you can just sit and wait for somebody to come fix it. So that's why I have the relay or the contact or whatever it is and the capacitor.
See, it's not as much of a problem here in Ohio, dude. You know, we have 2 weeks, you know, we'll have like maybe a month of that kind of weather, and you have it you basically have the opposite that we have during the winter.
Basically, there's about 4 or 5 days a year I use heat.
Right.
And that was a couple of weeks ago.
But I would sure contact your landlord there, Dan, and get somebody to fix that freaking heat, man.
Well, heat's fine. It just makes a hell of a lot of noise.
You ever hear of this thing called oil?
What am I going to oil?
Like, hey, the squeaky part?
I can't see the squeaky part. He's a
wrencher. He's a wrencher.
That's why they make the oil in a can with a spray. So you just, like,
oh, that's
put an axe into it.
When the heater turns on and it's got it going on, just start spraying what, WD-40 spray oil in the crack?
Right, yeah. Yeah, just spray oil in it. No. See, Dan is renting, so he can just call up the landlord and say, fix a fucker.
Well, Dan, what you need to do is you need to break it. This way he can fix it.
Yeah, that's the problem. They come in and they look at it, because not only is it squeaking, but, like, all the insulation around the vents, like, when it rains, it comes in, like, the vent on there, and it pours down into the insulation.
Yeah. Wait a second. It sounds like Pegwall's place is better.
It sounds like what?
Sounds like Pegwall's place is better.
Yeah. And it hangs and it pools down here in the insulation, and it's like a big zit on the bottom of this, like the duct parts of it. And I've told them about
this
it.
This is like,
they're like, yeah, that'll happen. I'm like, well, can't you fix it? Like, well, it still works, yeah, doesn't it? Then doesn't he fix it?
Yeah, I would seriously keep hitting him up, and then tell him, you don't actually have to have one. Just tell him, I'm going to call my attorney, and they'll probably start doing something about it.
So this was a good one, right? So our stove, one of the burners wasn't working anymore, and it never worked really well, right? And it was almost like it was terrible. And then the buttons for, like, so it's got like these buttons at the top to set the timer and the oven and set the clock and stuff. And then it stopped working, right? The ability to set the time in particular stopped working, and to set the timer stopped working. But I could still, like, do the oven a little bit. So I call them in to fix this, you know, and say, hey, look, here's the situation with it. And I explained it. And he's like, well, you know, you don't really need to set the time, right? You could...
Clock. It's not like the VCR is flashing new.
Yeah, and I'm like, he's like, well, how often do you need to set time? And I'm like, daylight savings time, which is like next week. Every time that happens or the power goes out, I need to set it then. The only way I could, like, set it is to pull the plug on the damn thing and wait
till
it's like that.
You were one of those tenants, you know?
Yeah, and I'm like, and so I'm like, he's like, well, you know, you really don't need the time or a timer to have a functional stove.
So,
and I'm like, I use it all the time. Can't you do? And he, like, then he left, and I told the wife, and my wife's like, that shit ain't gonna fly. So she contacted the management office, and the next day they come walking down the street with a stove they just pulled out of another unit.
Oh, like, Jesus.
Give me a brand new one. Give me another one. And so I'm like, oh, geez, you know, fuck,
well,
I don't care.
At least it worked.
Yeah,
you know?
No, it's been working great. And actually, this one I could actually level out. The other one, it was like cooking on a inclined plane. It was bad. Like, everything would just pool down to the front.
This is the kind of stove with the little wires in the top, you know?
Wires in the top?
Yeah, like the old school coils on the top, or is it like a flat surface?
Oh, no, it's got the heater plates. You know, and that's the thing is, when the heater plates started going, I yanked it out, put a new one in there, and that didn't even fix the problem. So I'm like, I tried to take it apart and look at the connections and stuff, and then finally I'm like, you know what? You're right. I am renting. I've been here over 8 years now. Like, come on, let's see what happens.
Start fixing shit, landlord. That's what you gotta tell them. I mean,
yeah.
I would never stand for that. If I lived in a place like that, I'd be on the phone the minute. That's like, now I will have to say now what we had done, and it's worth every penny. So shut the fuck up, Rich.
Yeah, Rich.
But we pay for Columbia Gas started it. I think it's actually, well, it's still through our gas bill. Okay. But basically I pay them like a little bit every month. And then when I call them to fix certain things, like certain things are on it, like things like my actual gas line's actually on it, so if somebody hits a gas line out there, they'll come fix it. My air conditioning, heating, my washer and dryer. Now my dryer, we had one of the wheels go out in it, so it was noisier than fuck, you know. I called them up. And I called them Monday, and they said, we can be out today. I'm like, seriously?
Wait, they came out and fixed your dryer?
Yes. Yep. And guess how much it cost me other than the what I pay on monthly on my gas bill? Nothing.
Wait, why? So, is your dryer a gas? Did you, like, get your dryer from them?
No, it's an electric dryer, too. That's the funniest thing is they don't care whether it's natural gas or what. Yeah, they'll fix it. Yep. And
does it cover your washer too?
Yeah.
Oh, it covers all your electronics like that, or appliances like that.
Yep.
Your stove, your dishwasher.
Yep.
Dude.
And the garbage thing. Now, granted, I will say this: it does
the garbage disposal.
Garbage disposal. Yeah.
No, that's his wife.
No. It covers all of that, and up to certain levels. Like they'll only go so far, you know. So. Like, I think that
they won't go all the way.
The washer and dryer, the limit is like $2,000, which is nothing. You know,
$2,000. How much did you pay for that washer?
I paid like $800 for it.
I was gonna say
that's
more than the washer.
I know. That's damn. The coverage. That's why it shocked me Monday when I said, okay, what do I owe you? Because I thought I'd have at least a copay. Because that's the way it used to be. It used to be like a maybe $10 or $20 copay.
Dude, I got a new scam you're going to get rich on.
What's that?
But
you're just going to swap in people's washers, dryers, whatever
what
appliances.
I was thinking when you said that, you know, call your neighbors over to drop their washers over.
You got to open an appliance repair shop. Yeah, just break down.
But it was, this is the kind of thing where it basically, you have one thing, and it's going to cover the repair. I mean, it's this, that repair, it probably didn't, that one repair probably didn't cover the whole cost for this month for sure. But to me, it's like an insurance plan. You know, it's exactly what it is. I don't have to screw with it.
You mean, I didn't have to fix the sink Sunday night before he's leaving for Orlando? I could have just called, you know.
Well, that's not,
that's not
on my plan.
That's not an appliance covered by them, man. You're screwed. You're out of luck.
This is true. It's not, actually. Yeah, it's not.
Now, if it was the garbage disposal in the sink, yes, but not the sink itself.
That's true. That's true. But yeah, I mean, generally, I mean, I don't have too many problems. That was the first problem I had with that dryer in 3 years. So, I mean, but I have had other little minor things over the years, and it really, I mean, to me, it's worth it. Am I paying more than I should? Yes, I admit that. But you know what? I don't give a fuck.
That's the attitude. I need that money today.
When all I have to do is pick up the phone and call somebody to fix that stuff, works for me.
I had to fix my dryer.
I like being the guy that has the gun and the ammo. I mean, the guy that has the knowledge on how to fix it and the tools and the parts to do it.
Yeah.
Because, dude, you know when the power goes out and the zombie apocalypse comes, you know who's going to survive on Tilt? Me and Pat. The rest of you guys are screwed.
You're going to fix our dryer? You're going to fix your dryer?
Damn right we are. I'm going to bring it to Joel's, and I'm going to call the gas company.
Yep. But it's It's just, like I said, it's an insurance policy. I don't have to mess with that. I mean, there's still lots of stuff I have to do around here, you know?
Does your dryer run on Linux?
You know, it could. I don't know. It does have Wi-Fi. No, I'm serious. It has Wi-Fi, but...
Wi-Fi in your dryer? Why do you use Wi-Fi in your dryer?
Wait a minute. No, hold on a second. That one doesn't have Wi-Fi. It's the one above it that I didn't buy that did. Some of it does. Like, now my microwave has Wi-Fi. And that's not why I bought it. I bought that because it had all the features I wanted, and it just happened to have Wi-Fi. And actually, I will tell you, it's kind of handy to have that, mostly because I was sitting there, had something in the microwave, but I was on this long-ass call. So I just fired up the app on my phone. I could tell when the microwave stopped.
Wait. You have a microwave that has Wi-Fi?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he just got done telling us about it.
I thought you said dryer.
No,
he didn't get
no, the dryer.
So
no,
the bell that goes ding isn't enough notification? Or are you just looking at the clock? Saying, huh, I put it in for 3 minutes, it's 3 minutes later.
Hey, I didn't buy it because it had Wi-Fi. I bought it for other reasons, but it just so happened to have it. And
no,
so
right.
Does that mean I'm
so
going to use it? Yes.
Joel, there's two
what?
Kinds of lazy. So there's two kinds of lazy. There's a lazy that I am, and then there's a lazy that you are. I'm so lazy, I wouldn't install the app on my phone. I would just walk over there and check it. No. You're so lazy, you install the app on your phone so you don't have to walk over there
now,
and check
now,
on
it. The one thing I haven't tried was, because there are, I know I can control the light, because it's, you know, over the stove now. The light in the microwave, I can actually control with Google Home Assistant. I'm not kidding. did I need that? Nope. Did I want that? Not necessarily, but do I have it? Yep. And it's actually getting to the point now where it's actually getting harder to find stuff that doesn't have that. So far as appliances go, with some of this stuff, depending on, you know, especially if you're looking at higher end appliances like the one thing I absolutely did not want in my microwave was that, you know, how a lot of microwaves are painted white on the inside. I didn't want that. I wanted either stainless, or they have kind of like the same kind of coating like your stove might have on the inside of it. I think that's what ours has. It's either stainless or that. So when you go to clean it, you know, if you accidentally scratch it or something, that paint's not going to start to peel, you know. And that's one reason not why I picked it. It also happens to have convection in it too. So basically, I can use it as like kind of like a second oven. I have tried
But will it work as an air fryer?
Technically, probably does. Although I have my standalone air fryer, which I absolutely love. So, the one thing the one thing the convection feature in that microwave had won't work with that my air fryer does better is things like French fries and stuff like that, because my air fryer came with a basket. So I basically put the fries and stuff in the basket, and it turns it so it tumbles those fries so they don't stick
to the... Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it doesn't stick to the wire. The only thing it doesn't work great on is things like tater tots, because tater tots just start to disintegrate as they tumble. But...
why are you eating that stuff? That is like poison.
I eat my serving of it. I don't pig out on that stuff.
Nah, you just got to cut that out of the diet.
So
now you could eat.
I don't
sweet
have
potato
it.
Fries.
I don't have it, but maybe once a week. So
yeah, I don't have that about once a decade. You can eat sweet potato fries, and those things won't kill you.
Those things are delicious too.
Damn right they are.
Mm-hmm. Actually, what I'd like to find, couple places I've ever seen it at, and it's never been like, well, they might be in the frozen foods department. I haven't seen them lately, but sweet potato tots. Those would be delicious. But, no, I mean, it's just, you know, I cannot do full, like, Dan Fry with the full keto. I just can't. It's not going to work. Not for me.
Serious? Full keto is easy, man.
Yeah.
All you got to do is if it has eyes on it, you can eat it.
Until the grease in my gut starts to churn. Because I'll get heartburn pretty bad if I eat too much of that stuff. But
oh, we gotta wrap this up.
Yeah, it's time to go. That was the point.
Time to eat sweet potato tats.
Heartburn is when we close the show.
That's it.
Heartburn. Tomorrow I need to make sure I get out of bed early enough so I can put I'm gonna make beef stew in a crock pot tomorrow.
You just need to get a pressure cooker.
I got one of those. I just like to, in the morning, just put it in the crock pot and let it go. And by the time I'm through my work day, it's ready to eat. But
thanks for reminding me. I got to take mine out of the freezer.
But, Dan, I'll tell you what I'm jealous about. I got to get a sous vide. I definitely got to get one.
A sous vide device. You know, I don't know. If I want one,
you know what I like about it? What I really love about my sous vide is particularly for chicken and mainly, but one of the things that I find myself, I really do use it for, like, I will go out and I will smoke a tri-tip and I have an idea of how long it's going to take, but it doesn't matter. I finish that sucker off in there, get it to the temperature I want, whack it on the hot plate there on the stove to give it a char on the outside, and then I just stick it in the sous vide and let it sit there at like 130 until I'm ready to use it. And it just stays perfect temperature until I'm ready
So basically you just sear it and then do the rest of the cooking in the sous vide.
Well, no, I will smoke the tri-tip till it gets to like 125 to 130 degrees. I like it rare. And then I'll take it off the smoker and sear it in a pan because the grill's somewhere around 250. You're not going to get a sear on it. The smoker's not going to get a sear. So I'll sear it in a pan. Then I'll put it in a sous vide at 130 and leave it in there until I finish everything else. And everything else is ready. Then I take it out, let it sit for like 5 to 10 minutes afterwards, let it loosen up, and boom, carve it, and it's ready to go. But yeah, nice. I do like the sous vide. It is very helpful. And they're not that expensive, Rich.
No, not anymore. No. Not anymore. I mean, one I've been toying with, but I'm not so sure on. Other thing I've been thinking about picking up, I had one for a while, got rid of it, but one of those vacuum sealers.
Vacuum sealers.
Yep, especially when I cook too much or when I buy like a big pack of meat at Sam's Club and I could break it down into smaller packs.
I got one, and here you go, Rich, you cut this out. I got one, and it just stopped sucking after a while, right? It just didn't suck it all out of there.
See, if I get one...
Wait, do you say you have to buy a big pack of meat, or you're packing big meat? Wait, I've got confused.
Wait, who are you asking? That
of course you know who he's asking. He's being an ass. Actually, not. He's not being an ass. He is an ass. But anyway,
stick with what you're good at.
Yeah. But I actually, one thing I've done too when I've had the vacuum sealer is say if I got like a decent pack of steaks over at Sam's, I'll divide it up, and then I'll put different marinades in at the same time as I'm sealing it, and then when you seal it, it kind of goes into the meat, and then I just stick the whole thing in the freezer. Yeah, that way, basically, when I'm ready to cook them, I pull it out of the freezer, thaw it, and it's ready to go. It's already marinated, ready to go.
If you had a sous vide, you wouldn't even need to thaw. You just throw it right in the sous vide.
I was going to say, yeah.
An extra hour in there, and you're going to go right from frozen to fully cooked. Then you take it out, sear it. Well, yeah. I mean,
yep. Yep. But like so things like that, and I would probably buy the bigger one that has the storage for the roll, the roll of bags inside of it, and I had, like I said, I had one. The canisters I didn't really care for that it came with. They had canisters, but my problem was they were all too small. You know, so like I couldn't, like, what the canisters would have been ideal for if they were big enough is like just put things like flour and stuff like that in it. Because then I could suck the air out. The flour would last a little longer. I mean, already flour already lasts a pretty good time anyway. But and I just, you know, I just haven't done that. I think if I were to get rid of stuff, appliances in the kitchen, probably what I would do is I would probably get the Ninja Foodie, which has the air frying and pressure cooking all in one device. My only question is how would that work? Because there's certain things my air fryer has and I know that doesn't have, you know, like the basket for tumbling things in it, which, I mean, I'll buy like a Rally's frozen French fries or Arby's curly fries, and I'll do those, and it comes out pretty good. Like I said, it's not, but maybe one meal a week that we actually make those and that. But then I've done other things too. I made beef jerky in it. I mean, it's great. The air fryer is great for that.
All right, I got to play out our promos here.
Do it.
Yeah.
Night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to hear your promos for the week. We'll see you in 7 days. Thanks, Rich. What happened to him? You gone? All right.
He left.
Yeah. To hell with him. Here's your promo.
Oh my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Haunty Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night. The interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, it's hard to believe that January is almost over.
It's hard to believe you're still playing a promo with Fitty in it.
I don't have any other promo for the show for that show. They never sent me any. How's the church going?
It's going. I think one of the things I need to do soon, but I won't say it's a pressing matter. We had a revival this week, or last week, I should say. Like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we had like a guest evangelist come in. Uh-huh. And Friday night, I told him I couldn't work because I didn't know what was going on with my aunt. Still don't know yet, other than what she died from now. But I'm at Sam's Club. Just so happened I was by myself without the wife and kid. Don't mind that at all. I actually prefer that. and I get a text from Randy, he's the guy that's over the entire production team. He's kind of started splitting out some of the stuff he does, so I take care of most of the streaming, where he does a lot of the other stuff and the scheduling. And he does some of the streaming too. Anyway, he was doing it that night. They go to fire it up in we use software called vMix. It's kind of an alternative to that they paid for before they even asked me about OBS, but that's okay. It's actually probably better than using OBS because it's a little bit more user friendly. But anyway, so they go to fire it up to Boxcast, which is our streaming provider. That's who we pay them like a monthly charge, or I think it's either a monthly or a yearly charge. They host all the videos for us. Uh-huh. And they host the live stream. So they fired it up and it said server unavailable. I'm like, well, nothing we can do about that, Randy. If the server's unavailable, you know, we can call them, but probably by the time it becomes available again, the service will be over. You know, so there's nothing we can do. So what I'm going to investigate is how can I make vMix stream direct to YouTube as an alternative? That way we can tell people, like via our social media sites and stuff, that, hey, sorry, the stream's was not available on the website. Just go to our YouTube channel and you can watch the service. So, the other nice thing Boxcast does for us as well is when it's working, it streams on the website, plus it'll also stream to YouTube simultaneously. It actually works well when the server's up. Which, what I don't get is from talking to Pastor Phil, because he actually talked with the provider and all that with our office staff, and found out that Boxcast, all their servers are hosted in AWS, and I'm like, how in the world are they having a problem supporting the load with AWS?
They need to pay more money. I gotta stop.
I guess.
Joel, say goodnight.
Good night.
Around a rascal. On a ham conventions.
In a diaper.
Not that bad. She's just old, dude.
Ew.
Oh, no. I close my eyes. I still see her.
She was hot.
She's still crazy hot.
She's smoking.
Kind of reminds me of my wife.
Kelly LeBrock is what happens when you have too much plastic surgery.
I don't know, man. Those British women don't age well, my experiences. When they're young, they're fucking hot, but when they get old, man, no.
Yeah, no, I'm just gonna stop. Oh my god, she is my wife's age. She's my wife's age. And my wife's height.
Wasn't she like on one of the reality shows?
Oh my gosh, my wife's skinnier and hotter than Kelly LeBrock, and she's the same age.
Well, she was on a reality show, right? Was she on the Flavor of Love or something?
No.
That was Bridget Nielsen, I think.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm getting her confused with Bridget Nielsen. And it wasn't Flavor of Love, though, I don't think. It was
Flavor Flav.
It was something that Flavor Flav was on before Flavor of Love.
Oh, my. There are crazy hot pictures. Oh, and then not so hot.
At least she didn't go cat lady bad with the plastic surgery, but she did mess with herself.
I don't know. Whatever.
You know who's aged phenomenally?
Pizza.
Linda Carter. She's got to be in her fucking 70s, and she looks fucking great.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the last picture I saw of her. I was like, really?
Olivia Newton-John's aged pretty well too.
Yeah, but you know, besides the cancer, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
she does look great.
Yeah.
It's in the genes, man. Not everybody ages gracefully, I guess.
Damn, what do you have going
on
there?
What are you running, a lathe?
That's what it sounds like, a lathe.
I gotta
shut off the heat, because that's the heater, and I'm like, hey, there's a problem with this. And
sounds
like
no,
Dan, there's no problem with that heater. It's okay.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's been like that for 2 years now. So.
You've been manufacturing battles, haven't you?
Yeah, that's it. It might as well be. Hold on, I gotta
turn
it off.
Sound like Peggy's heater.
Speaking of Peggy, does anybody know if he's alive?
Seriously?
Yes, he is.
Should I text him, let him know there's a show?
He wouldn't care.
You mean he worked this year, so he's not showing up till next year?
Which, by the way, Happy New Year's, everybody, since I haven't talked to anybody since, like, before Christmas.
Hey, buddy.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, he just shared a picture of how bad 2014, January 2014 was with him, where he had the water leaking in and his furnace.
And he had to get a new hole in the ceiling.
Here I am wishing for just a little bit of snow, and we haven't got diddly.
Yeah, we haven't gotten any snow either.
Fuck you, man. You're in Florida.
But you're cutting grass. I ain't fucking cutting grass.
I don't cut grass either.
No, you pay somebody.
I pay somebody to cut my grass.
Not your daughter.
Better not be a bunch of illegals.
No, I got rid of that.
Been hooked on watching some of LG. I started watching the thrifts videos from LGR.
Oh, back.
I'm a little jealous of his skills of finding stuff.
What's LGR?
Lazy Game Reviews.
Oh. So Pat, you see the SHOT Show reviews?
Yeah. Some things I'm interested in. It looks like it was the year of the AK.
Oh, see, I thought it was the year of the 22.
Of course, no, because they went to ban it.
That and the Ruger 57.
Right. There are a couple of 5.7s. Who is it? Had another 5.7 out. But, yeah, there are a couple of 5.7s. The CMMG had a 5.7. But, again, they're almost up there with a PS90
for it. Yes, they're expensive, the CMGs.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait for the Ruger threaded barrel version. My 22 can handle 5.7.
Woohoo! A buddy of mine got a T&E on the Ruger 5.7. Actually, he had one of the first videos. It was embargoed.
Who, Hank?
No, not Hank. Slav Guns.
Okay, how do you like it?
No, he loved it. So yeah, he's kind of inside on the gun industry, not just a YouTube guy. So. hopefully I'll get my own 5.7 for TNE.
Let me know how you like it.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, they're gouging on those because they're short in stock.
Oh, really? Oh, because somebody, Seven-ish. I heard... Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. I heard people were getting really low prices for it.
I don't know. If you go look on Gunbroker, they're gouging.
Oh, well, Gunbroker, you always get that. You got to find places. There are places that pre-ordered them.
Oh, yeah,
they're
yeah.
selling at very reasonable
the,
price.
The guy that Nothing Fancy likes out in Warm, Utah.
Yeah.
I forget the name, but that guy has it for like $630, which is reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I think MSRP is $699. But
yeah, that's gonna eventually. It's gonna, you know, the demand's definitely gonna level off, and you'll probably see it for like $550.
Yeah, I think it's gonna go there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I. And what was funny is the first couple of days when that was released, all of a sudden the 5.7s were like $650. I'm sorry, not $650. How much were they? They were like $950. And like a week before, they're $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so AK and BNT in 10mm.
Yes, I was just looking at
that. Thing is hot, man.
All right, I got a beef with Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec came out with the sub 2000, you know, the integrally suppressed.
Yeah.
Now, if they did that in 10mm, I'd be more than just ho hum.
Oh yeah, that would be like a freaking like a stun gun.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that BNT is sexy, man. Shot the 9mm version of that, and it's really nice. It's very well put together. Like, I compared to, like, the Stryborg. You familiar with the Stryborg?
Did you see Walter at Safety Harbor? He built a Stryborg lower that takes Glock mags?
No, I did not. But I'm not that impressed by the Stryborg. I don't know. It doesn't blow me away.
It uses AR fire control group and Glock mags.
That's cool.
And it's, well, the cool thing is that's not the serialized part.
Yeah, it varies, you know. Sometimes it's the upper, sometimes it's the lower, sometimes it's a combination.
Right. That's the problem with the 50 that he has, is now it's serialized.
Right, the upper.
Because it used to not
that's
be.
That's bullshit. Not for nothing. Yeah, that's total fucking bullshit.
Yep. But who's got the money to fix it?
Yeah, I know. You're going to have to fucking sue somebody.
Yeah, you need DC lawyer money. So that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
ooh, it's 8:37.
Yeah?
They found out how my aunt died.
What happened?
She stopped breathing.
That's probably ultimately it was. No, atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, and she must have had a broken her leg, but they said it was an old fracture. Her right leg was broken at some point. So all I know is it was healed, and she knew that it was broken, you know, but. It was complicated by that, so she must have had like a blockage in her leg, is my guess, because of the fracture, which was probably years ago.
So a blockage in her leg because of the fracture, which, oh man.
If I had to guess, right.
So she didn't go to the hospital or anything when it happened?
Oh, hell no. My aunt's cheap. Oh, my, she had no money.
Oh, the worst of those compression fractures where like the nerves and the blood vessels die off.
Oh, right.
And they got to fucking amputate. Oh my god.
Yeah.
I know a couple of athletes that went through that. They almost had their fucking legs cut off and shit from that.
Now the thing I'm scared of the most, because I've seen my grandfather go through it, is my wife. You know, she's diabetic. I'm close to it. But my grandpa, he got gangrene on his toes. And they ended up having to amputate his leg about halfway up his shin.
That sucks, man.
And the worst part with him is he got wicked phantom pain. Even though the part that should had been triggering the pain signals was cut off, he still felt it.
Yeah, it's fucking rough.
He never could walk normally, even on his prosthetic. So,
is that the how as far as it extended was to his leg, his one foot?
Yeah, ultimately, because the ultimate thing that really did him in was he had a severe stroke that put him into the hospital / nursing home permanently.
I mean that's rough. There's this family in where my daughters go to school that they obviously I don't know which kid it is, but they have a kid in the band, and we've seen them from when Paige was there all the way up to like Elena, she's still in the band. And it's kind of sad because I guess the mother has the same thing, or she's a grandmother. With the diabetes and going gangrene, it's like every time you see her, there's like another part of her missing.
Oh, that's horrible. That's so sad.
And yeah, that's what happens.
She always a nice and smile and pleasant person, and it's sad to see that though. You know,
that's what happens when it goes untreated, and I hope to hell that doesn't happen to our buddy Link. We already know his kidneys are not working well. But at least he's still walking, still working.
Yeah.
Trying to plant a garden on his porch.
All right, I guess we better start the show.
There's a show.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, here we go. Give me a
now. Right. Now that we cheered everybody up, you know. Yeah. Now that we're all
right.
Got stuff.
Is Joe back?